Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today I'm joined by Nathan France, who set the supported FKT for the Foothills Trail Yo-Yo, completing the 150 plus mile route in 2 days, 1 hour and 35 minutes. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on.
So your FKT that we're going to talk about is the Foothills Trail. And I would love it if we could start out with you just giving us a description, because I feel like a lot of our listeners probably aren't familiar with the Foothills Trail. So if you could just talk about where it's at and kind of a description of the trail, like how long it is, that sort of thing.
It is basically on the border of North and South Carolina. It runs through the foothills of North Carolina into South Carolina. And you traverse up and down quite a few mountains. You do go across the highest peak in South Carolina and then come down to a lake and cross a lot of streams that feed into the rivers. The stream feed into that lake, come back out from the lake, go into the North Carolina side for a bit. Actually, the North Carolina side is the bottom, and then you come back out into South Carolina and finish back in South Carolina. So it starts in South Carolina, middle is North Carolina, and then you finish back in South Carolina. But yeah, over 150 miles and 74-ish miles one way. And it has about 14,000 feet of change one direction.
What's the trail itself like? Can you talk about, is it mostly single track? Are you on dirt road? What is that like?
It is mostly single track, and it starts out in Table Rock, South Carolina, or the direction that I took is the one terminus in Table Rock, South Carolina. The other one is in Oconee, South Carolina. And you traverse from the Table Rock side, you pretty much go straight out. You're going up until you get to the top of Pinnacle Mountain, basically. And then you go over Sassafras, which is the next over, and down. Then you're almost going down for a long time until you get to the lake. And that's Lake Jocassee. And then after that, once you get to the lake, it is almost like a two-lane wide. It's not a gravel road, but it's a path. I guess maybe it was an old logging road. I'm not really sure. And then you take that for a while until you get to another single track, which takes you to the Whitewater Falls. And from there, it's pretty much single track all the way to the other terminus. It's very up and down, lots of streams and rivers and creeks that you cross, lots of bridges. It's pretty amazing. As long as the trail is and as many streams and rivers you cross, most all of them have bridges, which is pretty wild. So this trail is very well taken care of. The people, the Foothills Trail Conservancy, they do just an amazing job keeping up with everything on that trail, especially after the area was hit with Hurricane Helene. We saw tremendous damage to the area. So many bridges were really messed up and downed trees. It was a mess. So they did a lot. I did it the year after Helene. So it was pretty amazing that it was already honestly cleared.
Yeah. I was wondering how Helene had impacted the Foothills Trail because it is right in that area where there was so much damage.
I didn't see it before the clearing. Well, that's not true. I was on it not long after, but we didn't do the entire trail. So you could definitely see the damage. And then also Table Rock, two or three years prior, had a major fire.
Right. Yeah.
The whole area is just, you know, it feels like it went from one disaster to the next. But it's wild to see the change in your surroundings. You know, I had seen it beforehand and I grew up in the area. And so I remember what it looked like before the fire, before Helene. And it's just interesting to see how much it's changed the landscape.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I guess maybe that segues into why you decided to do this and why specifically a yo-yo rather than just one way.
Well, me and a friend, we did the Palmetto Trail. That's another FKT that I set a few years back. And it goes from in northern South Carolina through Charleston, South Carolina. And so anyway, we had this idea that we were going to do another one. We wanted to do another one, and we had thought about the Foothills Trail. It looked attainable at the time, and we were also planning to do it unsupported as a team thing. And it was, I guess, it technically would have been self-supported, would have been the FKT, but it just didn't work out with the schedule. And I was like, well, I think I'm going to continue with this. Something I want to do. I was turning 40, and it seemed like a great way to, you know, kind of bring in my 40th birthday. But then, you know, I wanted it to mean a little even more. And so I'll back up just a little bit about the FKT part of it. When he decided he didn't want to do it anymore, I was like, well, I don't really want to do this by myself. I don't want to do this as just a self-supported or an unsupported route. I would much rather have people around. And, you know, that's part of what I enjoy about doing these long distances, and is creating a crew, a team that, you know, yeah, sure, you're the one that's doing all the miles, but it's just such a better experience when you get to experience it with other people. And even though, you know, they're there to support you and get pacers, and it just makes it more of an event. And so I decided I'm going to do the supported. I knew what the FKT was for the supported route. Actually, the current still female FKT for the route out and back is a friend of mine, Rachel Blinn. And so I remember when she did it and what it took. So I was familiar with what it was. And then as far as the out and back goes, yeah, I don't really know why. I honestly don't even know what the current one-way time is. It never really occurred to me just to go one way. I don't really know why. I guess part of it is I was also looking for the distance. I wanted to go over 100 miles, well over 100 miles, and also the time. I was looking for something that was going to push me into nearing or beyond 40 hours, which is kind of what I expected. Some of my original time thoughts were like 33 to 36, and then that went out the window pretty quickly. So yeah, originally we had thought, sorry, not 30 something hours. We originally thought it was going to be 40. I think I was shooting for 40 hours. And then the second best was 46. And then we went beyond that. But, you know, we were on pace for 40 hours, I think, for the first 40 miles, 50 miles maybe. Yeah. And then after that, I just knew there was just no way it was going to work. I feel like I had ran an ultra pacer, which is, you know, I would assume most people listening to this are probably familiar with what that is, but it's a website that helps you predict your times for aid stations and such things like that. It's a free website, but which is awesome that somebody is doing that. You can sign up and help pay for it, which is, you know, something I do to help support the website. But, and I feel like it had missed some of the, like the sections didn't seem to add up. We were doing more miles than what it was predicting, which I knew something was off because the total mileage wasn't correct. I just didn't know where the miles were missing, but I found out quickly where they were. So anyway, yeah, back to the why question. I've kind of gone on tangent, but so it was my 40th birthday. So that was one thing. I wanted to do something pretty big for that effort-wise. And like I said, I wanted to make it even more, mean something even more than just for me. And my nephew, TJ, has a rare genetic disorder disease. It's leukodystrophy, which is similar to cerebral palsy and the fact that they don't have control of fine muscle movements. He currently can't walk, and he can use his hands and, you know, feed himself and sort of hold himself upright and communicate okay. Even his speech is not as clear. I had always, even when we did the Palmetto, it was something I looked back and I wish I would have used this to help raise money for something. So this time I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make it happen. And it was actually the month before that I really got it all together. I got the GoFundMe set up and talked to people and was telling a lot of people I knew about it. And then I started making social media posts, and it really went really well, even in the beginning stages. So many people responded and it was awesome. The other thing, every year before that, I had helped with another fundraiser that's called Steptember. It's raising money for cerebral palsy, doing cerebral palsy research and helping families that have CP, and they, we did, I forget how much money we raised, but I did it 2 years in a row. You run so many, walk so many steps, or in my case, I ran most of mine every year. And for every step, you get somebody to, you know, pay so much money per step and that kind of thing. So this time, instead of doing it for an organization, I really wanted to do it for my nephew specifically and his family. And so we set up the GoFundMe for them, and they have about, for 1 year, it's $10,000 is what it costs just to do really the basics of what he needs. It doesn't really include major things like if you have to have a new wheelchair, or because, you know, he's a growing kid, boy. And as he grows, we have to change that. And, you know, all of his treatments, it's just, they have to fly to Philly every other month, or no, once a month to check in with the doctors. Cause he actually, just as I had, we'd done the fundraiser that same year in July, he just got onto a treatment that where he was the only one that they were trying on. He was the first. Yeah. So that was pretty awesome that he got into that, but it just was also creating, you know, new expenses for the family. So anyway, I was just like, I'm going to use this to help bring some attention to him and his family. And, you know, and it was really with all these long distance things, we always talk about one of the biggest things you need is a why. And he really became that why and that reminder of, you know, what I was putting these miles in for. You know, I'd raised the money, we started the fundraiser, and I was like, I can't not finish this now, but I've told these people that, hey, I'm going to go out and do this effort. And if I do this effort, you know, support him, it just, so every mile, every time, you're just so tired. And that was probably the biggest thing. You know, we can talk about it more about the experience, but, you know, it is the fatigue, the exhaustion, the time out there. But yes, we are currently at just over $6,000. I still have the fundraiser live, and because I'm actually continuing, the Foothills Trail was part of a series of trails that someone local to North Carolina came up with called the Brooch Challenge, which stands for Blue Ridge Ultra Trail Endurance Series, Charles Raffelsberger. And so after completing the out and back of the foothills, I decided I was going to do all of the Brooch challenges as a yo-yo. So I just completed the Georgia Loop yo-yo, which is actually, I have to submit the route as a new route because no one's ever done it as a yo-yo. Somebody did it as a double, but not quite the same.
Right.
So that's in progress. I finished the loop already. I did that just, I guess it's been four weeks ago. And so that's number two. It was completed, and it should be, you know, once all the everything's done, it should also be a FKT. It was a little bit shorter, more vert, but shorter.
Yeah.
But back to the foothills. So yeah, I've kept the fundraiser live, as I'm going to keep it live until we finish the Brooch Challenge. I didn't quite raise, well, my original goal, honestly, was $5,000. And the more I started thinking about it, the more I realized, you know, 1 year's worth of, I'd put it in the, you know, the GoFundMe page, that 1 year's worth of expenses of $10,000. I was like, I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing. I might as well just keep the fundraiser going. I mean, why not? There's no reason not to. And I'm just going to continue bringing, you know, attention to him. And so, and it is awesome. One of the big things that they've actually been able to use the funds for is swim therapy that he was not getting before. And it's one of the few places that he has the opportunity to almost walk, you know, it's feel, have the similar feelings of what it's like to move your legs and, you know, have an upright position. Otherwise, the only way he has that ability is in something called a standing chair, standing desk. It's not a standing desk. It's like a standing wheelchair, sort of, which puts him in an upright position and has wheels. So you can move him around and he stands up. It's just interesting how we take, you know, things for granted, just simply being able to stand, much less walk. And it's pretty wild because he's just the happiest kid. You wouldn't know that he doesn't understand the things that he, you know, he sees other kids. He goes to a normal school, public school. So he's around other kids who have the ability to walk and do everything that he doesn't have, but he doesn't know any different. So he's just as happy otherwise. And it's just pretty humbling to think when, you know, I don't know, we just get something to where we're a little sore, we roll an ankle, or I don't know, it just, we're a little bit, I don't want to even use the word disabled, but we're slightly, you know, something is not right. We're not able to be perfectly, you know, running or walking or whatever. And yet, you know, and then you think about somebody who doesn't even have the ability. So it was just a, you know, I wanted to bring light to that because we can. It was a couple years back, I ran a marathon, and on the sidewalk, part of the marathon, there was somebody had written in chalk, like different kind of things, like motivate you. And, you know, and one of the things was said, run because you can, and run because you can, and run for those who can't. And that was really kind of my mental thing, was just constantly thinking, run for those who can't, run because you can. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of the why. And as far as why I did the double, it was just really about the time on feet. I eventually would like to do a 200 of some. I'm currently looking at doing Tour de Jeans, which is in Italy, and it's a 200-mile plus race with 80,000 feet of vert. So this was kind of like a stepping stone in that direction. Mm-hmm. Is now I'm looking at it, but anyway.
Yeah, it's a really powerful why. So switching gears a little bit to the actual experience, I know you said you didn't want to have this by yourself, and so you wanted to go supported. And so I was wondering if you could talk about what your support looked like how many people were involved, how often you were seeing crew, if you had pacers, how much you did by yourself, if any. Just what did that sort of look like for you?
So actually on this effort, I decided to start out with crew, with a pacer. I was going to try to do the whole thing with support to give me the ability to go as fast as I can. I actually only carried a waist belt with a bottle in it. Mm-hmm. And my pacer carried we had figured out each segment and how long it was going to, should be out there on the segment before I'd see crew again, and how much water I would need for the segment, how much nutrition. And so I would carry one water bottle and like two or three gels, and then my pacer would carry the rest. And then, so I don't remember, like, I don't have it, remember exactly how much each section that they carried. Well, I do remember one section. So I'll start off with the first section. It was one of the shorter sections. I think it was 11 miles. And that was from Table Rock to Sassafras Mountain. That was where I saw them first. And so that went by fairly quickly, which, funny story, when we left the parking lot, I was all hugs and happy and cheering. And me and my pacer, we actually went the wrong way. Because the trail splits. I had been there before, but I mean, I've done that section actually more than once, and I thought it seemed odd, but they had all this caution tape up on the other side of where there's like an entrance to the trails. There's a building there. And so I was like, well, I guess we have to go this way, or, you know, this is the trail. And we got up to the next intersection. I was like, this is not the right way.
Right.
So we turned around, and I basically just restarted my watch because I was back at the start. So restarted the watch, and what it was is there was a bridge they were rebuilding, and that's why the caution tape was up. So you had to cross the creek.
Okay.
And so just all that threw me off. I mean, we didn't go, but I think maybe half a mile out of the way. So it wasn't very far, but it was enough to be like, okay, well, let's just start over, start fresh. I mean, it's just means I'm starting later, whatever, it doesn't matter. There's no official race start time. So anyway, yeah, we left, and then, so I think I only had to carry like one bottle in that one. Man, we met my crew at Sassafras, which I didn't really stop there. It was kind of like a rolling stop. They gave me another bottle. I picked up a different pacer. I had actually my friend, Aaron Saft, who's also my coach, who's an amazing athlete in his own, has done some amazing things. Speaking of amazing things, he was that month, he was doing a run the day challenge. So you run whatever miles the day was. Okay. So he was currently, that day he was supposed to run 27 miles. The day before he had ran 26 miles.
Right.
So we had already talked about this prior. He was like, well, I've got to run 27 miles. So you've got me for 27 miles. I was like, okay. Well, I went out a little bit hotter than he was really ready for. So I ended up having to leave him on the trail and had to pick up another pacer, which he finished his 27 miles, just not with me. But so, yeah. So I got a new pacer and we left Sassafras and started heading basically down towards the lake. And that is that next section is a big section. I knew it wasn't. Well, you go down Sassafras, and I think there's like it was 4 or 5 miles. It wasn't very far. We got to see crew again before the really big section. And so we left, saw them, the base. It's not really the base, but sort of the base of Sassafras, and then went in towards the lake. And that is, I want to say it was 12 miles. Yeah, I think it's 12 miles to the bottom where the lake is. And there we hadn't but planned for the crew to hike in to meet me with other stuff. There's no parking area there. There's actually a camp, a Christian camp there near, really close to where the intersection is. And we had gotten a hold of them and they were able to let us park there because the crew hike in from there is only like a mile.
Okay.
Otherwise it would have been almost 6 miles from. There's another access point and it's a public access point. So I just want to say big thanks to that camp that is the Wilds camp. They were very generous in letting us park there and letting my crew get in, made it so much easier for them. And so that next section, so it's 13 miles with a lot of, that's that direction. It's mostly downhill. It is, there's still climbing. It's not all downhill, but it went well. It was still daytime. So I started at roughly 7:30 and the plan was to be there around 1:30, I think. And we were pretty much on time. We were staying on time with what I had planned for, I believe, a 40-hour finish. And then I actually ended up switching pacers again. My friend Caleb, who I've known for a long time, great friend, just another shout out. I'm going to make sure I talk about every pacer that I had. The guy before was Michael Patton, who just is an awesome guy. He's done some amazing things himself, has some FKTs, and he came out and he did a lot. He jumped in when he wasn't even planning to be pacing for that section. He just jumped in and was able to get on and on board and help out. So yeah, he got that section and then Caleb jumped in. And we had another large, big section. We weren't going to see crew for, it's 13 miles around about, or 19, sorry. My friend Caleb's here with me and he's helping me remember all this stuff. I should have printed all this stuff but anyway, it was 19 miles. So it was going to be a long haul. And we knew we were going to go into the night. So, you know, ate something at the lake aid station, hugs, and my crew chief, Teresa Bowser, who also set an FKT the year before on a course that she made up in our backyard of Western North Carolina, which was unbelievable course. It was 103 miles with almost 26,000 feet of change. But she came out and was my crew chief and did just extraordinary. I couldn't have done it without her. She was so attentive and always had everything in check, made sure all the pacers had what they needed, what I needed, how many bottles I needed. I never had to think. I just showed up and they were ready and she gave me what I was supposed to have and we left. And it just worked so smoothly because of that. So yeah, me and Caleb left and we knew we were going to have a long section. It was 19 miles. And I want to say, so we got to one point, I was trying to keep track of the time of how long we were supposed to be out there. Cause that was really, with those sort of efforts, the mileage seems to be harder to pay attention to. And it's easier to focus on the time. So yeah. It's like, okay, I'm not going to see crew for this long. It gets more manageable. But so I was doing the math and we got to an intersection and it said so many miles to Whitewater. And then I did the math on how fast that meant we had to go to stick to the time goal. And I was just thinking, man, that seems really fast for what we've got left. And but we managed to push and stick to that somehow. Well, we weren't very far. We were maybe, I don't know, 30 minutes behind, which is not bad considering how far we had gone. And I think that section ended up being a little bit longer than it was supposed to be. So there was also that. We ran into the night, saw crew at the next place, which was Whitewater Falls, which there, again, there's a turn that goes up to the falls. And then, but you're not supposed to go that way. Mm-hmm. And we went up. I wasn't very far, but it was all up. It was all stairs.
Right.
And yeah. We got to a certain spot and I knew where we were. And I was like, shoot, this is the wrong way. And so we had to go back down. Like I said, it wasn't very far, but at that point, just any little bit extra is just so aggravating. And so we went back down, got to the crew, and that's where, so the crew ended up meeting me on the trail. The point that I had picked, I thought was at a road intersection, but it was just before the road intersection. So they ended up meeting me on the trail and had food and everything we needed. At that point, I switched out pacers again. That was when Sean came in. Yeah, Sean, my friend who set the Palmetto Trail FKT with me, he showed up and switched out, and Sean Clayton. So that was really cool. And then I also had another friend. As far as crew goes, let's see here. I'm just going to back up and think about everybody that showed up. So we had Teresa Bowser was my crew chief. Aaron Saft was my first pacer. Michael Patton was the second pacer. Caleb Gander, third. And now we're in Sean Clayton. And then I also had crew outside of that who ended up, one of my crew wasn't planning on pacing. He ended up pacing me later. Clay, I lost what his last name is right now. Clay, I'll think of it, Matt. He came out and then another friend showed up at that aid station and she had fresh cookies.
Nice.
Natasha, that was so clutch. She drove all the way out there just for the night. She stayed through the night and then had to be back home. So that was really cool too. It was so much fun to have everybody, see everybody come out and support. And it was the best birthday party, you know. It was a kind of a crazy way to celebrate a birthday, but it was, hey guys, show up to my birthday party. Oh, you're only going to see me, you know, for maybe 5 minutes at a time. And, you know, it's going to be in the middle of the night. And you might have to hike in to see me, but let's celebrate in the middle of the trail. And I don't know, it was pretty special. So yeah, I got my new pacer at the Whitewater Falls. After Whitewater, it was nice. The sections were a little bit shorter. We saw crew more often. So Sean had, I think, maybe a 4 or 5 mile section. And then we saw crew. And then the stops were shorter when I saw crew more often, because we wouldn't have to re-gear as much, bigger, you know, more bottles and all that kind of thing. So Sean was with me for 2 sections, I think a 4 mile section and maybe a 5 mile section, something like that. And then after that, Michael Patton jumped back in. It wasn't super long, but at that point it was dark. You know, I was getting tired. So I knew I was going a little bit slower. And we ran, it's the Chattooga section. It goes by the Chattooga River. And you go up and down around the Chattooga. And the river was so loud that the white noise, I mean, you know, a lot of people like sleep with a white noise generator or something in their, you know, ears or whatever. And that sound was just so deafening that it was making it so hard to stay awake. My buddy Michael gave me I didn't think anything about it, but he gave me his headphones that were noise canceling, his iPods. And it was the lifesaver. I never even thought about doing that, but when I did it, it made total sense. And just having music and not having that white noise made it so much easier to concentrate. But I did end up taking like a a 5-minute nap on that section. I believe that section was 8 miles. And so we took a cat nap for 5 minutes at trailside and just laid down and told him to wake me up in 5 minutes. And that's what we did. And so we got, after the 5-minute nap, I felt pretty good. It definitely helped me mentally be refreshed. I was still tired, but it was better. So we got through that section, and then we only had one more shorter section after that. And he stayed with me until the turnaround point.
Okay.
So I believe it was, I think I'm doing that math right. But he did stay with me to the turnaround. After that, I didn't sleep anymore until we got to the end, the other terminus. And that's where my buddy Zach, he came in, who he did the foothills 2 years ago as part of the Brooks Challenge himself. So he was familiar with the trail. But he met out there. He had brought the crew pizza, and he had also made fresh cookies. It was so cool have him show up like that. And, you know, that's the other fun part about, you know, bringing all the people together, just, you know, the little things that people do to, you know, just make the experience unique. So he, at that point, it was just before daylight, I think, when I got in, and then the sun came up as I was there, decided to, I think, change clothes and decided to take an actual nap. Woke up, me and Zach got off, and we got through the next couple sections pretty well. I was back. I mean, sun's out. I've got a new, you know, boost. And Zach was using the time to help push me. We got into the section where I had slept, and he's like, you know, Teresa, I was like, how long until we see them again? And she's like, we're supposed to see him in this much time. And he's like, let's beat it. Let's show her we can do this faster. And so he really helped push me, and we did well in that section. We got through, and it was supposed to be, I think, I don't remember, 4 hours, and we did it in 3.5 or something like that. So yeah, that was great. And, you know, spirits were up, everything was going great. The sun was up. And so after that section, I switched from Zach back to my coach friend, Aaron Saft, who was at the next one. And it was kind of cool when we came out of that out of that section, his name escapes me, but his Instagram handle is Leapfrog Cafe.
Oh yeah.
He does trail magic, and I had no idea he was going to be there, but he was happened to be set up at that intersection for something to do with the foothills. People had got him to come out. I don't really know, but it was just crazy because I come out and there's literally like this massive aid station.
Nice.
There's a truck set up with a huge tent, and they're cooking food. And he ended up they were making pork chops, but I was like, I don't know about a pork chop.
Right.
Actually ended up eating a hot dog though. That actually went really well. And he made some amazing fries, and it was really neat to have that there and unplanned. So
yeah,
that was cool. And so Aaron picked me up there. I sat down, I ate the hot dog, and we got everything situated, and we left off. But the next sections we had like a couple shorter sections, like a 4. It was the ones that Sean had done with me before the night before. So we went through those pretty well. Everything, moved through them pretty smoothly. Then I knew really to me, I had to get through the whitewater section back to the lake and then back up. You know, once I got through that kind of, what to me was like the middle, the hard middle, then I knew I could get, you know, finish it.
Right.
And I knew that was coming up. There was kind of like this, you know, wanted to hurry up and get there. And there was also sort of this dread of once I knew I got there, I was going to not see crew for a long time again. And it's really interesting, you know, with these things, how just seeing people, how you're able to create this, I don't know, thing in your head, how much just seeing different faces makes so much of a difference. You know, it can so drive you. It's such an interesting thing. So we made it to Whitewater, and that's where we took a little bit of a minute. I took a nap there. Actually, I think I took a nap at the last one too. Now that I remember, I took like a few minute nap because Teresa took a picture of me sitting there with my headband over my eyes. And I ended up taking another nap in the next one, just a little bit, another like maybe 5 minutes, not very long. And that's where I remember Aaron, Teresa had, we figured out how long I was going to be on that section. It was going to be a little while. We were going to have to go through the night, into the night. And I was going slower. So we calculated like what we thought it was going to be. And Aaron had like, I think, 4 bottles of water. And so my pacers, not only are they carrying my stuff, but they're also carrying their own.
Right.
I mean, they got to stay hydrated and E as well. So his pack, I mean, there's no telling what it weighed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was at least 4 bottles. And she told him like how much, you know, they was supposed to have drank all that by the time I saw them again. So he was constantly, have you drank something? Have you drank something? Because he wanted to get rid of those bottles. So
reduce his pack weight. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the running theme of that section was, have you drank something yet? And when was the last time you drank?
Yeah.
It was never ending. For some reason, that was the only section. I mean, I guess I stayed on top of it everywhere else, but either that or I didn't. And that's why she was told Aaron to make sure I did.
Right.
So I don't really remember. I just always remember like when I filled up, or I don't even remember when I filled up the bottles. I just know, I'd just be like, hey, I'm almost empty. Can we fill up? And but that section did, we started it and it just felt like forever. It felt like it was never going to end. We went into the night. I was getting tired. I didn't take any naps on that section. Yeah. We went into the dark and I would get so frustrated because we get to where the mileage didn't seem to be adding up where we were supposed to be. And so I would get to a place and I would just think we were going downhill. The way that course does is you're going down to the lake and you cross 3 major rivers. Well, yeah, because Whitewater, Horse Pasture, and Thompson. And so what it'll do is you would go kind of like over a knoll, a ridge to a bottom of a river, and then you'd go over another one. And so every time you go over one, you'd think, oh, we're going down to the lake, and it wouldn't be the lake.
Right.
And yeah. You'd just be going back
out. It's never the lake.
And every time you get, I just felt like it was just taking forever. And it did take us longer than it was supposed to. And the crew ended up calling us, got a hold of us when we were only like a mile out from the lake aid station. And Michael had ran in to find us. And so anyway, we finally got there. It felt like forever. It was late. Aaron did make it with me through that whole time. He got his mileage in that day because he was still doing his challenge. That day was 28 miles. And so I think what I gave him, he ended up right at or just over, I think it was like 30 miles, I think is what he ended up with. But Michael was picking me up at the next aid station. Me and him left from there. It was dark. It was pretty late. I think it was, I don't know, it was like the middle of the night. Wasn't going to see daylight for a while. I knew that. Probably not till I saw crew again. So not only was I going to have to do another long section, but this long section was going to be completely in the dark.
Mm.
And that was a lot mentally to take in. And it's like, but I was also in some ways, you know, I kind of looked at the whole course as like this giant, you know, V where at the lake, like there's one big side section on one side of the lake, and then there's a big side section on the other side. So once I got back to the lake, there's just this one long section left. That's how I was mentally thinking about it. And then once I did that, I could finish, you know, there was no question, but I had to get through that section, and that was a tough section to get through. This time wasn't so much the miles. I did go by. I didn't have quite as much mental fatigue with the, you know, are we there yet kind of thing. It was just more, I would get so tired, which speaking of, are we there yet? We left crew and it wasn't long after that I looked down at my watch and it was completely blank. It went black. We had looked at it earlier and it showed that it had plenty of battery. I still don't know really what happened. At that point, I did have my tracker, I can't think what it's called, InReach. It was going. So I still had tracking, but I didn't have my watch, which was really annoying because at that point I was looking at my watch every quarter mile. It was just helping me to see things move. It was like in the night, I don't know, even though I was moving, I needed every little bit of encouragement that I could get,
right.
You know, like to see that quarter mile. Okay. We only have to go this much farther. And so my watch died and I didn't have that anymore. I didn't have that little security blanket, extra little piece.
Yeah.
So I was constantly asking Michael, like, man, you got to tell me, like, when we get, you know, a half a mile, when we do a quarter mile, just do something. I need this mental stimulus to keep me going. Because the terrain is, you know, that big section, the only good thing about it is the terrain is probably the least technical. There's some wider sections of trail. I mean, there is technical spots, but for the most part, it's the least technical. It's the longest. But this next section is quite technical. It's all single track. It's very up. Going back from the lake, it's some serious climbs. We had a lot of climbing to do to get to crew again. And I knew that going into it. And I ended up taking, I believe, two naps on that section. They were only like, again, 5 minutes a piece. That seemed to be working. So I just kind of stuck with it. So we did a couple more naps and that's what it was. So I was on that section, the second nap, starting to develop some really stiffness in my right calf.
Yeah.
And it was making it difficult to run very well. I was messing up my gait. And so after the second nap, when I stood up, it was just like super tight. And I couldn't really seem to get it to release. And it was making it really hard to run downhill.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely slowed me down. I was starting to slow down even more. We did finally make it to the crew just at daybreak. And that was where Michael left me. But I think somebody else was supposed to jump in there. Michael was supposed to keep going. I can't remember. But that's where Clay, we hadn't really planned on him being a pacer. He jumped in and paced me for this next section, which was up to Sassafras. It was a total of, I think, 8 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 2 4-5 mile sections. And so we got everything changed out. We got going up. And I was at this point, I was really exhausted.
Yeah.
My body felt okay. The calf was kind of annoying, but it was getting to this place where it was just like mentally, it was just constantly in like a fog, was not alert. And it was dark still. So there was that was part of the problem. And then also not on top of that, when we started heading up towards Sassafras, a thick fog was starting to move in and it became really windy.
Mm-hmm.
So that just didn't help at all. So me and Clay started heading up. And at that point, the other thing that I encountered on the last section, my pacer, Michael, was trying to do everything he could to try to get me awake. So he ended up getting me to eat a bunch of calories and it didn't quite sit well with my stomach.
Right.
So my stomach is now not great. I'm tired. And I got to the place where I couldn't wear my hydration belt that I'd been wearing. It was just bothering my stomach. Well,
mm-hmm.
I could wear it, but I couldn't wear anything in it. So Clay was like, well, I'm here. I'm your mule. You might as well just let me carry everything. So he just took my belt and carried it. And I was like, well, I guess you're right. That is what you're here for. So I let him carry it because it was just really messing with my stomach. And once I did that, it cleared up and it felt better. So we made it to the next spot where at that time, my only crew we had, Teresa met me there. And then also had one other crew person that I hadn't mentioned. He was my crew and he does photography, trail photography. He does a lot of local races. His name is Pete Schreiner. He does some awesome work. If you've done a trail race on the East Coast, he's probably been at least one of them as the photographer for the race. But he came out because he's also friends with Michael. But I mean, I know him too. He's friends with me. And so, yeah, he came out to do some photography to help me, you know, record everything. And so he was there at the next aid station with Teresa. And she actually ended up riding up there with him because the fog was so thick that I think she couldn't see to get up there. I don't remember exactly why. But when I got in, she was just like, okay, let's go. Let's just get to the next one. And I was already falling asleep on the trail, almost falling off the trail. Mm-hmm. So I was like, no, I've got to take a nap or I'm not going to make it. She's like, oh, okay. So they put me I couldn't sleep outside. It was just too cold and windy. And it was also raining at this point. Now it was this blowing, spitting rain. It wasn't like a downpour, but it was wet and nasty and still dark and very, very foggy. So they put me in Pete's car, and that was probably the best sleep I had got since the turnaround, the 15 minute nap. I got like 8 minutes here. And that was the first time when getting up, my leg wasn't super stiff. It was still sore, but it felt better. So we went up, and the next section was just a sassafras. I've only had like 4 miles sassafras. It wasn't too far. And then once I hit sassafras, you get over that, and the next section, you're home free. That's it. There's one more, like double, I think it's 11 miles. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. It's double digits, but it was, yeah, that's right. And that's my friend Caleb picked me up there. And once we got the sassafras, the daylight had come. I got there basically just as daybreak. And did we make it? No, it was still dark. See, I can't even remember. It was still dark. The darkness never seemed to go away. That was the other thing about the time I picked was, you know, at the end of the year. I mean, you know, the winter solstice is December, you know, 21st or whatever. So the least amount of daylight, I was picking that time. And I think I calculated, and we almost had more darkness hours than daylight when I ran, which is kind of crazy, almost. But so yes, it was still dark when I got to sassafras. And Caleb picked me up, and it was super nasty outside, foggy. And I ended up putting a calf sleeve on my right calf because it still wasn't quite right, and I didn't know what else to do. I wasn't really sure what was wrong, so I was afraid to do anything else. We left out on the last section, so it was exciting. You know, we're way over time, my original time. At this point, I just really was hoping to make 48 hours, and then, you know, I wanted to break 50. That's right. What it ended up becoming, but not break 50. So we left out. I was pretty still, just physically, I felt okay. Like my body wasn't too sore. Legs were not terribly sore other than one calf. Everything was okay, but I was exhausted. Like I've never experienced the difference between your body being physically okay, but you're just exhausted. I don't know how else to explain that. Like my legs, I wasn't sore. The soreness wasn't necessarily there, but I couldn't seem to keep myself awake. So we left and we went out. I don't remember how long it was. I'm pretty sure I told him, I was like, I got to take another nap. And I did. And after that next nap, it was like 5 minutes. I was like, I realized it wasn't working anymore. 5 minutes. I woke up, and it wasn't very long after that. I was still exhausted.
Yeah.
And so through the night, I decided, I was like, you know, I really felt like I wanted another nap, but I knew that the only way it was going to change was I was going to have to take a lot of sleep. I was going to have to sleep for like, you know, an hour. And I was like, I can push through. I can make it. You know, there was times it was literally like zombie walking. I don't remember half those miles. I remember just leaning in on my poles and just my eyes were closed, and I was just essentially dragging my feet and thinking, you know, every step forward is one more step to daylight. If I can just make it to daylight, I'm pretty sure the daylight will be enough to help wake me up and get me to the finish line. And we made it all the way up to Pinnacle. I remember we left and I was asking what this next section was like. I was like, it's mostly downhill, right? And Caleb's like, yeah. Then Teresa goes, I said, Teresa, how much, what is it? She's like, she told me the exact gain, and it wasn't all downhill.
Yeah.
There was still quite a bit of gain. And we did. You basically almost have to climb until you get the Pinnacle, and then it's downhill from there.
Right.
Finally. And we basically got daylight just as we got to the downhill, and we're heading back to the end of the park. And the daylight it made a huge difference. I was still exhausted, and the technical terrain, it gets extremely technical through there, was very difficult to get through. My calf was not happy. Running was not really happening. When I got to the last 2 miles, mile and a half, something like that, that was the other good thing, is like the closer we got, and I feel like at some point they charged my watch. So my watch was working again. I don't remember when that was, but I think, oh, I gave it to him when I saw him after the long section with Michael, and they charged my watch and I had the tracker. And then when I got the stats for us, I just got the watch back. So I had that to look at, which was nice. But so yeah, the last, I think it was towards the end, there's markers on the trail in the state park. So I knew no matter what my watch said, I knew how much was left to get to the finish line. And that's when it was either a mile and a half, 2 miles. I was like, I'm going to run. I'm running this in. And I managed to get myself up and run to the finish, which was an interesting thing. I had struggled all the whole way down. My legs, they felt like they hurt. My calf and my ability to, you know, stand on my toes, just everything was like not happy. But when I made that decision to run, it was just like all of a sudden something flipped, this switch got flipped and I was able to run. So it really told me that I don't think it wasn't that I physically couldn't. It was that the exhaustion level had gotten to the place where my body was just basically trying to say, hey, you're supposed to stop now. You're supposed to stop now. And trying to send every signal that it can to get me to quit.
Right. Yeah.
So that I would lay down and take a nap. And I just kept refusing. So, but, you know, finally I was able to switch into my brain because I knew, hey, I only have 1 mile, 2 miles left. I can do this. I can run that far. And so, yeah, we ran to the finish. And unfortunately, the finish was a little less dramatic than the start, or a little less enthusiastic. Or at that point, I had lost a lot of the crew. Everybody had to go home. I mean, we'd been out here for over 2 days.
Yeah.
And at this point, it was, so I started on Saturday morning, and now it's Monday morning. And, you know, it's there, people got to go back to work. You know, Teresa, she had planned to be there, and, you know, but I didn't know what anybody else could do. And then the other crew person that I had was my friend June. She had come out. She'd been there the whole time too. She was kind of co-crew chief throughout the whole thing. And so she was there. Caleb was there. And you know, obviously he was there because he ran in.
Right.
but yeah, it was an awesome moment just to, you know, have people there to see and, you know, experience that finish with. It was wild. And it's interesting, you know, how you're so tired before. And at that moment, I was pretty awake. It didn't take very long before it hit later. But yeah, that's pretty much the story.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing. This sounds like quite the adventure and a great way to celebrate your birthday.
It was a great way to celebrate. 10 out of 10 recommend FKTs for birthdays, especially when they're 2 days long. I mean, you get to have a 2 day long birthday
right.
party.
Yeah, 2 day long birthday party in the woods. That's awesome.
But yeah, thank you for having me on. It was great to get to share my experience.
Thanks again, Nathan, for coming on the show. You can read about his FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow his adventures on Instagram at steadypacenate.